So many new faces and new families among our church family here, and it's been a real joy of mine to be able to talk through and teach what does it look like for church membership and what does it look like for someone or anyone to learn to love their church. And when it comes to faith in Jesus, we don't only get a relationship with God. We also get a relationship with His family. He brings us into relationship with Him and out of isolation and aloneness. So we don't just get something, we don't just get away from something, but we also turn to something when we come to faith in Jesus. So regardless of where you're coming from, no matter what your background is, no matter whether you're familiar with the church family, unfamiliar with the church family, I'm hoping to recapture the New Testament vision for what a local church looks like. I'm hoping that you can recapture it based on some of the things that we hear from the Scriptures as God describes to us what He designed His family to function like. And during this message series, I'm hoping to help every ordinary Christian see the value of their involvement and also to embrace their role, to see the value and also kind of think through and apply and implement what role do and what role can I play in it. And we can all learn to love our church. Doesn't mean we love everything about it, but it means we love everyone in it. We don't have to love everything about it. We have to love everyone in it. And so many of us have learned that over time, but we can learn to love our church the way that Jesus expected us to. Again, loving Jesus and rejecting His family is the same as failing to love Jesus, right? So the question is, what kind of church members are we made to be? And how do we embrace and embody that? What kind of church members does God make us to be, and how do we own that for ourselves? And the answer is, really, could be kind of summarized. There's more than these, but there's at least 8 great things about being a part of a church family. 8 great things. We've talked about a couple of them. There's a third one. We're going to frame them this way. 8 key privileges and responsibilities of church members. In this series, I want to draw your attention to these privileges and responsibilities. Each responsibility is a privilege, and each privilege has a responsibility that goes along with it. And this week, number 3, we're going to be looking at gathering. Gathering. That's one of the privileges and responsibilities for church members, people who belong to Jesus. Not just this one, but His church around the world. That's one of the privileges and responsibilities. Learning together to value the corporate meeting, which adequately and no surprise, ironically, maybe, we're doing right now. It's already happening in real time. You're experiencing this right now. Unless, of course, you're watching this on record after. I never think of that. I should think of that, shouldn't I? You probably have experienced this at one time or other if you're a live streamer. So the church is more than a building you visit, right? It's the people. It is more than an event that you attend. It's the people. However, this doesn't mean we don't get to discount the gathering together of believers and the importance of that, right? So the church is not a place. The church is not a location. The church is not a destination. The church is not an event that you attend. It's a people, and it's a people who gather together. That is what's critical. And gathering corporately is an essential aspect of our spiritual maturity. It's also, as Pastor Jonathan has already started to lead us in singing about today, it's also kind of a foretaste of what we'll be doing in eternity, which is gathering together and celebrating and worshiping and adoring our rescuing King Jesus. And we get to kind of preempt that by doing that together before that, and all redeemed people getting a taste of that ahead of time. In the book of Acts, there is this story that's recorded. Luke is writing that the local believers are gathering together. And he tells this story that if you don't know, you have to know it. There's a handful of stories in the Bible you have to know. In my opinion, this is one story you have to know. And I don't have any reasons why you have to know this. But I think once you see it, I think it's possible that you're like, that's good to know. That's good to know. I don't think it has any real lasting value for your life, but when you see it, you'll say, that is good to know. I'm glad Pastor mentioned that one Sunday. It's actually about a town named Troas, and Troas is having a church gathering. The Apostle Paul is the featured keynote speaker. He's a celebrity, and they're meeting in a home. They're upstairs, and Paul is there, and he's gathered together, and they're having an unforgettable worship service. Everybody, if you're comfortable doing this, say unforgettable. It is unforgettable. You know what this means? It means that the service that they experienced together that day, they will never forget. And I'm pretty sure when you read about it, you're going to remember it forever. You ready for this? Check this worship service out. On the first day of the week, we gathered with the local believers to share in the Lord's Supper. Right? Jesus showed us the Lord's Supper. It was the broken bread and the shed blood represented by, or the broken body and the shed blood represented by bread and wine. And he says, continue to share this supper in remembrance of me until I return. Paul was preaching. So, Lord's Supper, they're all gathered together. Paul's preaching to them. And since he was leaving the next day, he kept talking until midnight. Isn't that a funny detail? I think that's a detail worth noting, that Paul the Apostle, in the middle of their meeting, it's noted by Luke, what time is it? It's midnight. He's talking till midnight. I think that's a great detail that he happens to write down there. The upstairs room where we met was lighted with many flickering lamps. As Paul spoke on and on, a young man named Eutychus, sitting on the windowsill, became very drowsy. So, can you picture? The light is flickering lamps. Can you picture the flickering eyelids? As it's midnight, the apostle's here. Everybody needs to be there, wants to be there, because he's the main guy. He's bringing stuff we've never heard. There's power and authority in his teaching, but he's still going. He's still going. In fact, Luke doesn't just say he's talking at midnight. He actually mentions that after midnight, he spoke on and on. But Eutychus is watching. He's in a windowsill. Finally, Eutychus, he fell asleep, sound asleep, and he dropped three stories to his death. Don't you think everyone should know this story? If you are a Sunday morning church attender, I feel like this should be the standard response for anyone who complains to you about how long messages are on Sunday morning. I really do. Pastor Dan went really long today. Did you die? Did you die? Eutychus? Are you Eutychus? Is that what you're trying to say? This should be the new standard. Listen, it was long, but we survived. Here we are. We did not die. So look what happens next. All right, everybody realize we got a dead guy here? Fell out of the window? Got drowsy, fell asleep. Boom, down he goes. It causes quite a stir. Can you imagine? It causes quite a stir. So let's see what happened. Paul went down, he bent over him, and he took him in his arms. Don't worry, he said, he's alive. Then they all went back upstairs, shared in the Lord's Supper. I love this. He was dead, but now he's alive. Let's eat. I love that. I mean, that's actually, I don't know what else would you do, right? We should eat together. So it's after midnight. Paul's going on and on. Dead guy. Okay, he's not dead. Everyone relax. Let's eat again. So they're, again, sharing in the Lord's Supper. They're eating together. And Paul continued talking to them. How long did he talk? Everybody see it there? Until dawn. Till sun up. This is so inspiring, everybody. This is so inspiring to me. I'm so grateful for Paul's example. So he continues until dawn, and then he left. Meanwhile, the young man was taken home. He's alive and well. Eutychus is alive and well, and everyone was greatly relieved. But also, they had a memory that they would never forget. They had a worship service they would never forget. How many of you have ever experienced something among God's people? Again, this is completely irrelevant and unimportant, but I'm curious. How many of you ever experienced something among the church family on a Sunday morning and you still remember what happened? Someone stands up, or there's a yeller. There's anybody have any, raise your hand if you have some memory that you think, I'm not going to ever forget that. Really quick, I was at a church service where there were people who were picketing. They stood up, during the service, they pointed at the person talking and started hollering insults. Liar! You lie to all of us! And family started to pop up and walk out. And when we left that day, they all had picket signs at the front doors. A few days later, I was visiting the church with a college friend. A few days later, we were back in college, and I got a letter from the church saying, "We hope you sensed our warm and hospitable greeting when you were there." I was like, I sensed something, but it wasn't warm and hospitable. So they were greatly relieved, and I want to circle back to the beginning of this passage, because what we're going to focus on this morning is not Eutychus, and it's not his death and his ultimate coming back to life, and instead I'm going to circle back and see something that kind of becomes a pattern. And I want to notice less something that's very rare and exceptional and memorable, and I want to focus on something more that we probably read right over the top of that is kind of a pattern of how the New Testament church works, how it functions best, how it gets and stays healthy. And that as we circle back, we're going to see this pattern that we see for a local church that's devoted to following and worshiping Jesus. A local church that's devoted to following and worshiping Jesus, and it's back here on the first line. On the first day of the week, we gathered with the local believers. This gathering is the beginning of what becomes a New Testament pattern of gathering together with local believers. First day of the week. In our case, it's every Sunday, right? In some cultures, it's not. It's a different day of the week. And in fact, different times in our history, it's been different days of the week. But a first day of the week, every Sunday, local believers, not scattered believers, local believers, gather together, first day of the week, and we see this as somewhat of a prescriptive pattern. This is something that is prescribed that is good for the health of God's people, and this is how it's described in the book of Acts. What does this mean for us? So here's what it means. God uses a weekly corporate gathering to nourish our souls and strengthen our faith. A weekly corporate gathering to nourish our souls and strengthen our faith. And our faith. My kids love when I do that. Our faith. So we have nourishment and strength. Where is it coming? From the weekly gathering together of local believers. That's where it's coming. And this gathering helps you, and it helps you in so many ways. We're only going to look at four ways that it helps you today. But the first way it helps you is this. These corporate gatherings on a weekly basis, they help you prioritize yourself with consistency. That's one of the benefits of this weekly regular gathering is it helps you build priorities in your life, and it helps you gain some consistency and to remind ourselves of the most important aspect of our lives, and that is the glorious fact that Jesus defeated death and his tomb is empty. And we need to be reminded of that because our hearts are prone, some of you know this, to do what? To wander. Everybody feeling okay today? Sometimes you guys are really responsive, and other times you're like Eutychus out there. So we see this aspect that we're celebrating on a regular basis, and we're reminding and remembering that the tomb is empty and our glorious Savior is alive, and also that we have a union with Jesus, and we remember that on a weekly basis. That we belong to Jesus, we're joined to Jesus, and his life, death, burial, and resurrection is something that he's done in our place, and we celebrate with anticipation that he's coming back again. And on a weekly basis, we get to meet together and be reminded of that. And we get to be reminded that no matter what's cluttered our mind and hearts during the week, we get to come back and declutter and refocus. And we get to prioritize that over and over and over again because our hearts are wandering over and over and over again. We saw it in the Old Testament with God's people. We see it in the New Testament with the local church. So the weekly gathering helps us prioritize our life. The weekly gathering helps us prioritize our life of worship. Also, we see Paul is writing, actually the author of Hebrews. Some think it's Paul, others think it's another author. But in this letter to the Hebrews, check this out. And let us not neglect our meeting together. Let us not neglect. Don't neglect meeting together. In other words, focus on consistency. We are careful not to read into this that we should focus on how we feel, that we should focus on our preferences, that we should focus on our favorites, that we should focus on the things that we like and don't like. Instead, we focus on consistency, doing the right things over and over and over, because we read in the scriptures that God says, my people gather weekly. They gather regularly. And we get to focus on consistency. There's some recent research out, and the research recently has discovered that the average regular attender now participates in the weekly local church gathering 1.2 times a week. Sorry, you already know it's not a week. 1.2 times a month, okay? 1.2 times a month. And that means that over the course of 1 year, the average regular attender misses 72% of the weekly gatherings. 72% of the weekly gatherings. And research also says that what shapes us is habits that we develop over time, right? When you think about it, it's the small habits that actually shape your life, not the one-time memorable moments. One-time memorable moments become significant in our memories, but they don't necessarily shape your life like small habits shape your life. I'll give you an example. No one ever gets healthier by signing up for one 5K race every year. No one gets healthier by running the Spartan race twice a year. In fact, the opposite is true. Someone can get healthy by going for a walk every day. If I had time, I'd tell you the research that I just read about people who live 10 years longer who are faithful daily walkers. They just walk and they add years to their life by staying active by walking. It is the habits that shape our life. And God knew that about us, and He knew that about our bodies. He knew that about our spirits, and He knew that about our social life and our spiritual life. And He said, consistently meet together. Like anything, you don't always want to do it, but consistency bears the fruit that we all need and want. Like anything that we don't always feel like doing, like we don't always want to do. Meeting with the faith family is a great example of one of the top ones, that over time, consistently doing something you don't always feel like doing, especially when the sun is out, since it only comes out in the central New York area 25% of the time, when we finally see it, it's like, finally, we're free. I don't want to sit inside. I want to be outside. And all of the instincts in us draw us away from the weekly habit, understandably. So, interesting question here. If the author of Hebrews is writing to the Hebrew Christians and says, let us not neglect our meeting together, who's neglecting the meeting? Who is neglecting the meeting? Here he says, as some people do. There are some people neglecting to get the gathering together, the weekly gathering together of local believers, and the author says we should stop neglecting that. Why are some people neglecting the meeting? Well, there's Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. And the Jewish Christians, do you remember our Acts series, some of you, what was happening to the Jewish Christians? You remember they were being persecuted? In fact, to the degree in which their lives were in peril? So, if you were a Jewish Christian, getting this letter called Hebrews, you were experiencing among your culture persecution because you were following Jesus. So, also, that persecution was driving Jewish Christians out of the city, so there were Christians being persecuted or who were living in isolation, who had been driven out of the city in what's called the diaspora, which is a disbursement or an exile. So here are Christians living in exile alone, in hiding, along with the ones that are still in the city being persecuted, and some of them, the church leaders discovered, had neglected meeting together because they were in danger or they were alone, they were isolated. And the author says, some of you are neglecting the meeting, and I understand why. You're alone and you're afflicted. You're alone and you're afflicted. Therefore, you're neglecting the meeting together. And then the author says, don't do that anymore. Why does he say that? He says, stop doing that because now more than ever, you need each other. And I often have the some sense of this in our culture, and I wonder if you do too. I've often felt that in recent years that we who belong to Jesus need each other in ways that are unprecedented in the modern time. That we need each other in ways that we haven't needed each other perhaps in a long time. And when you're tempted to neglect a Sunday worship service or a small group, ask yourself, am I missing because I'm being persecuted? Am I missing because I've been scattered and I'm isolated and I don't know where the believers are? I don't know where they're gathering. Am I being persecuted or am I unprioritized? Am I just having difficulty prioritizing something that God said this is something that has to be implemented into your weekly routine? Am I living isolated in a foreign land or am I living too comfortably in my own land? And these are helpful for us, I think, to help us prioritize and be obedient to what God's patterns that he's put into place for the local church. And this is why God wants us to gather weekly. Here's why. He goes on to say, but instead of neglecting the meeting, encourage one another. It's difficult to be encouraged, and it's difficult to do the encouraging unless we are together as a church family. Would you consider, we don't just get when to meet here, but we also get how to meet, that we approach the gathering as someone who's willing and able to encourage. I want to be a part of the encouragement. I see God working in you. I see the gifts, talents, and coming alive in you. I see growth in you. I see movement. I'm so glad to just see you and be able to get to know you. I'm so happy you're here instead of all the other places that you could be for nourishment and strength. In your own words, you get to take on a role when you come together with other believers, and the role isn't spectator to listen, be entertained, watch the performance, and then leave and over a meal grade it, right? And that's our nature as American Christians who are in this culture is to consume and judge, consume and probably not criticize, but analyze. And instead, what the author is saying here is when you belong to a church family, continue to meet together regularly and you get in there and you encourage people. Look for someone to encourage. How many of you, again, this is a rhetorical question, but I would love for you to humor me here. How many of you are here today and you yourself could use a little encouragement or you know someone who could use a little encouragement? Would you raise your hand? We're together. This is where it happens. Do you know where I've already convinced we don't get it? When we leave and we're outside the church family and we kind of walk into our world, here's what I've noticed. There's an abundance of discouragement available for us. And when we get together, what a thrill to be able to say, I'm going to be a part of the encouragement. I'm not just going to receive it, but I'm also going to give it. And therefore, I'm not allowing myself to just be a spectator who's getting saturated with information. Instead, I'm activating that information. I'm learning who God is in his own words through Bible teaching. I'm growing in God's joy. I'm learning to confess and repent sin. I'm renewing my focus on following Jesus. I am welcoming those who are guests. And by the way, we should point out, we recognize biblically we are unable to do the things that we're challenged to do together via live stream. Live stream is such a great tool to stay connected. I'm thankful for it, and I think it's effective, and I hear from so many of you, some of you now who are live streaming, who say, I am so grateful for this tool to be able to stay connected. That's what it's for, to stay connected when you can't. But haven't you learned, I hope you've learned, there is something encouraging and energizing about being with God's people in person, where you are unable to do the things that he has put us in place to do, the encouragement when we're just connecting through a screen, right? And if you're watching on the live stream, I'm so grateful that you're able to stay connected. You would love the energy and encouragement from being together on a regular basis. And some of you who are regular on a regular basis, I've heard from you. You say, I go away and I'm on a vacation, or maybe I'm taking a trip and a travel and whatever, and I get to see it. I'm so grateful for that. But I'm so relieved to get back with the people and be a part of what's happening. It's such a good tool, and I would encourage that if you're interested in being a part of the encouragement or receiving the encouragement, then you can be a part of in person. Another reason God gave his church corporate gatherings is this, to help you protect yourself with a community. This is another aspect of the gathering together of believers is that God said when you're together, it's going to be a way in which you can protect yourself from isolation and protect yourself. Your prudence of knowing this helps you reduce the risk. It's actually dangerous for you not to assemble with other believers. You know, it's actually dangerous for you spiritually not to assemble regularly. What's the risk? The risk is wandering off like a sheep leaving the flock and getting distracted and disoriented and eventually feeling so disconnected from the flock that our lives are cluttered up with other lesser things, right? Now, there is a proverb that said that compares two kinds of people. And the proverb is one of my favorite proverbs. The little proverb says that there's two kinds of people. There's a wise person and there's a fool. The wise person foresees evil. Or the New Living Translation says a prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. But then there's a fool, or the New Living says the simpleton, which is a great... By the way, if you are looking for a new insult, and you don't necessarily want to kind of like throw a haymaker insult, try this one out. Try simpleton. And here's what I think. People need time to realize what you're saying, and by the time they realize you just called them a fool, you're long gone. You're long gone. So the New Living Translation says, but a simpleton does not foresee the risk. A simpleton does not foresee the danger and goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. I think this is one of the examples of how this works, that God helps us understand that as you belong to the body, the family of God, it helps you, meeting routinely, gathering regularly, helps you to protect yourself with a community of people. And to the degree in which you foresee, if I am separated from the flock for too long, I wander away. And by the way, which sheep gets devoured by the wolf? There is a kind of, a proverb about this. It's the one that has wandered off from the flock, the one that remains disconnected and outside. And the shepherd has a difficult time protecting that one that's alone. And the danger for Christians? Isolation. Aloneness. And I recognize that you can be isolated and alone even among the body, even among people. I recognize that. And there's work to be done, and for every church family needs work to be done, both on how to be more hospitable and open and in a meaningful relationship, and also how to open yourself. A fool lets this kind of wandering happen. A fool doesn't foresee the danger of living your faith on your own and disconnecting from a church family. The Christian faith is a life of family, not individualism. But in our culture, individualism is king. So individualism feels like exercising your liberty and exercising your right to do whatever you want, whenever you want. And though that's true, there is some exceptional benefit and strength and protection as God's designed us to be in and among a community on a weekly basis, to be seen, to be known, to be a part of what God is doing to encourage the body. The author of our book, the supplemental book that I've recommended called Love Your Church, Tony Merida, the author, he says something that is I think helpful. He said, sometimes I meet a Christian who gathers weekly and is not thriving in their faith. But I never meet, or I've never met a Christian who does not join the gathering who is thriving in their faith. In other words, this faith of ours is not meant to, we're not meant to thrive on our own. We're meant to thrive in community and in regular relationships.